I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear the third and final part of the speech given by Dr. David Ray Griffin on May 7th, 2010, at the University of Hartford. The title of the speech is called, Is the War in Afghanistan Justified by 9/11? That will be followed by his answers to a few questions asked by the audience, and also some 9/11 and related news updates. So let's get started with the concluding segment of Dr. Griffin's speech, Is the War in Afghanistan Justified by 9/11? He starts out today talking about World Trade Center Building 7.
Other people reported that explosions went off in the late afternoon when the building started to come down. Reporter Peter DeMarco of the New York Daily News said, there was a rumble. The building's top row of windows popped out, then all the windows on the 39th floor. Then the 38th floor, pop, 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 was all you heard until the building sunk into a rising cloud of gray. NIST dealt with all such testimonies by simply ignoring them. NIST also ignored a lot of physical evidence. For example, three professors from Worcester Polytechnic Institute discovered a piece of steel from Building 7 that had melted so severely that it had been thinned down and had holes in it so that it looked like a piece of Swiss cheese. The New York Times pointing out that the fires in the building could not have melted the steel, call this the deepest mystery uncovered in the investigation. The three professors in a report included as an appendix to the 2002 FEMA report said, a detailed study into the mechanisms of this phenomenon is needed. When NIST took over from FEMA, it promised that it would carry out all of FEMA's recommendations. However, when the NIST report came out in 2008, it did not mention this piece of Swiss cheese steel. Indeed, NIST even claimed that no steel from this building had been identified. This was just the beginning of NIST's omission of physical evidence. The nearby Deutsche Bank building was heavily contaminated by dust from the destruction of the World Trade Center. But the bank's insurance company refused to pay up, claiming that the dust was ordinary building dust. And so Deutsche Bank hired a research company, the R.J. Lee Group, and it showed that the dust did indeed have the unique World Trade Center chemical signature, which included spherical iron particles. And this meant, the R.J. Lee Group said, that iron had melted during the World Trade Center event. Now, this is significant because iron does not melt until it reaches 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. The fires in the building under the most ideal circumstances, which did not obtain, could not have been over 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit. The R.J. Lee study also found that temperatures had been reached at which lead would have undergone vaporization, meaning over 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Another study was carried out by scientists at the U.S. Geological Survey. Besides also finding iron particles, these scientists found that molybdenum had been melted, even though it has a notoriously high melting point, almost 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Even this was not the end of its omission of physical evidence. A report by several scientists, including University of Copenhagen chemist Niels Harrit, showed that the World Trade Center dust contained unreacted nanothermite. Now, ordinary thermite is an incendiary, and it's been around for over 100 years. But nanothermite is a high explosive, and it is a recent invention. Now, this report by Harrit and his colleagues did not appear until 2009, and so NIST could not have, in its 2008 report, mentioned it. But it should have, just following standard procedures, chuck the dust for evidence of thermite and thermate, which is another form of thermite, thermite with sulfur added to it to lower the melting point of steel, and nanothermite. So thermite is used as a generic term to cover all of those forms of thermite. NIST was asked, did it check the dust for thermite? It said no. When Jennifer Abel, a reporter for the Hartford Advocate, asked Michael Newman, a NIST spokesperson, why didn't they check for thermite? Newman said, because there was no evidence of that. But, asked Jennifer Abel, how can you know there's no evidence if you don't look for it first? Newman replied, if you're looking for something that isn't there, you're wasting your time and the taxpayers' money. I understand she lost her job shortly after that. Besides omitting and distorting evidence to deny the demolition theory of World Trade Center 7's collapse, NIST also fabricated evidence to support its own theory. NIST's explanation as to how fire caused Building 7 to collapse starts with thermal expansion, meaning that the fires heated up the steel and caused it to expand. An expanding steel beam on the 13th floor, NIST claims, caused a steel girder attached to a column to break loose. Having lost its support, this column, which was column 81, started a chain reaction in which all the other columns in the building also collapsed. Now, leaving aside the question if this is even remotely plausible, let's just ask the question, why did that girder fail? Well, NIST said, because it was not connected to the floor slab with shear studs. NIST wrote, in World Trade Center 7, no studs were installed on the girders. Another passage. Floor beams had shear studs, but the girders that supported the floor beams did not have shear studs. However, NIST had put out an interim report on World Trade Center 7 back in 2004 before it had developed this theory. And here's what it said. The girders as well as the beams were attached to the floor with shear studs. The later passage quoted that other passage almost word for word, just leaving out "and girders." Another case. NIST put graphics in its report showing you the progress of the fire. And it shows an enormous fire burning on the north face on the 12th floor at 5 p.m., just 21 minutes before the building collapses. However, if you look back at this interim report, here's what you find. Around 4:45, a photograph showed fires on floor 7, 8, 9, and 11 near the middle of the north face. Floor 12 was burned out by this time. Other photographs showed that the 12th floor fire had virtually burned out by 4 o'clock. And yet NIST claims that at 5 o'clock, the fire was still raging. In addition to omitting, falsifying, and fabricating evidence, NIST affirms a miracle. Many of you know this cartoon with the professor at the board, and he's got these formula and equations, and then one line says, then a miracle happens. Now, this is funny because if you know anything about science, you know that's one thing you absolutely cannot do. You cannot affirm a miracle, meaning a violation of the basic laws of physics. And yet, this is what NIST does. I'll explain. Members of the 9/11 Truth Movement had almost from the beginning, watching this video of the collapse, said that the building seemed to be coming down in free fall, or at least virtual free fall. Well, NIST said, not even close. In that 2008 draft for public comment put out in August, it said, the time it took for the floors to come down was approximately 40% longer than the computed free fall time and was consistent with physical principles, meaning laws of physics. As this statement implies, any assertion that the building did come down in free fall would not be consistent with physical principles. Explaining why not, Shyam Sunder said, a free fall time would be the fall time of an object that has no structural components below it. The time that it took for those floors to disappear was roughly 40% longer than free fall, and that is not at all unusual, because there was structural resistance that was provided in this particular case. meaning all those steel columns and concrete. And you had a sequence of structural failures. Remember, one column causes another, 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 another. Everything was not instantaneous. In response, high school physics teacher David Chandler challenged this denial of free fall, pointing out that Sundar's 40% claim contradicted a publicly visible, easily measurable quantity. So then he showed how easy it was to measure this, putting a video on YouTube and slowing it down and measuring the acceleration of the building. And he said, by measuring this, anyone knowing elementary physics could see that for about 2.5 seconds, the acceleration of the building is indistinguishable from free fall. Amazingly, NIST, in its final report put out in November, agreed. Dividing the building's descent into three stages, NIST described the second phase as a free-fall descent over approximately 8 stories at gravitational acceleration for approximately 2.25 seconds. So its only quibble was it was only 2.25 seconds, not 2.5. So, after presenting over 600 pages of descriptions, testimonies, photographs, analyses, explanations, graphs, and mathematical formula, NIST says, in effect, then a miracle happens. Knowing that it had thereby affirmed a miracle, NIST no longer claimed that its analysis was consistent with the laws of physics. In the August draft, it had said at least 3 times, after describing the fall of the building, the rate, it said, and this is consistent with physical principles, and this is consistent with physical principles. In the final report, every instance of that claim was removed. Therefore, NIST almost explicitly admitted that its report on World Trade Center 7, by admitting free fall while continuing to deny that explosives were used, is not consistent with the laws of physics. The science of World Trade Center 7 is therefore settled. This fact is reflected in the agreement of many, many hundreds of professionals with various forms of expertise, architects, engineers, firefighters, physicists, and chemists, that this building was brought down by explosives. This truth has also recently been recognized by a symposium in one of our leading social science journals, the American Behavioral Scientist, which treats 9/11 as its prime example of what its authors call SCADs, State Crimes Against Democracy. Criticizing the majority of the academic world for its blithe dismissal of more than one law of thermodynamics that is implicit in the official theory of Building 7's collapse, it also criticized the Academy for its failure to protest when Professor Stephen Jones found himself forced out of a tenured position for merely reminding the world that physical laws, about which there is no dissent whatsoever, contradict the official theory. Now, Stephen Jones is the physicist who was teaching at Brigham Young University and was forced to resign. He is the one who discovered most of these types of physical evidence I have reported, and he is also the one who, including the nanothermite, he was the first one to discover that. Now, let me say another thing. What the social scientists in this symposium were saying was that, look, we're social scientists, we presuppose the natural sciences. We presuppose these laws that have held good since the time of Newton. We can't just say and stand by idly when they put out a government report that says those laws no longer obtain. That threatens our own standing. So we can't just ignore this. And now the world can see, if it will only look, that even NIST does not dissent. Let me back up. Another point they make in here, they quote Orwell. And Orwell had said in his famous book, that in these dark times you may not be able to do very much, but at least you can keep alive the secret doctrine that 2 + 2 = 4. The implication being that we need to keep alive the secret doctrine that the laws of Newtonian physics still apply to high-rise steel frame buildings. So NIST, in effect, admitted that the laws of physics rule out its own theory. It thereby implicitly admitted that explosives were used. And with that implicit admission, NIST undermined the Al-Qaeda theory of 9/11. Why? For one thing, the straight-down nature of the collapse of the Twin Towers as well as Building 7 means that the buildings were subjected to that type of controlled demolition that I mentioned called implosion. And this, in the words of a controlled demolition website, is by far the trickiest type of explosive project which only a handful of blasting companies in the world possess the experience to perform. Al-Qaeda terrorists would not have had the expertise to bring these buildings straight down. Another reason. The only reason to bring the building straight down, the easy way to bring them down is to make them topple over sideways. Lots of companies can do that. But think what would have happened if those 110-story Twin Towers and the 47-story Building 7 had come over sideways. You would have destroyed dozens and dozens of buildings in Lower Manhattan and killed thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Do you think even if Al-Qaeda had had the expertise to bring the building straight down, they would have had the courtesy? A third problem is that foreign terrorists could not have obtained access to the buildings for all the hours it would have taken to plant those explosives. Only insiders could have done this. The science of the collapse of World Trade Center 7, therefore, disproves the claim used to justify the war in Afghanistan and Pakistan, increasingly, that America was attacked on 9/11 by Al-Qaeda. It suggests instead that 9/11 was a false flag attack, provide a pretext to attack Muslim countries. The official rationale for our presence in Afghanistan and Pakistan is illegitimate, and we are there for other reasons, which our political and military leaders will not reveal. This war is neither legally nor morally justified. It is, in fact, an abomination. We should demand that our troops be withdrawn as quickly as possible. Thank you very much.
Again, that was the final part of a speech given by Dr. David Ray Griffin on May 7th, 2010, at the University of Hartford, called "Is the War in Afghanistan Justified by 9/11?" And speaking of war, according to a Huffington Post article on May 28th, 2010, the Senate approved $60 billion for war, while the House cut $24 billion for unemployed workers and state aid. The House will be voting on the war funding bill sometime in June. I called Congressman Larson's office to see where he stood on the war funding bill. The staff person didn't know, so I left a message telling Congressman Larson that if he voted for the war funding, that I would actively work against him in the coming election. If you oppose these wars, please call your congressman and tell them how you feel about this. They need to know that the public is out here, that we're irate, that we don't want these wars, that we want to bring our war dollars home. We're sick of killing innocent people on wars that were based on lies. There is some good news, however. In an article that was posted on the website globalresearch.ca, written by David Swanson, it is called "America Says No to War Spending. Congressional candidates and national organizations oppose war spending." And here it is, 66 congressional candidates. So these are congressional candidates. And 24 national organizations are opposing any more funding for the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, no matter what unrelated measures are packaged into the same bill, and no matter whether the bill appears likely to pass or not. The new coalition against war spending is inviting more candidates, including all incumbents and national organizations, to join. The 66 candidates who have already signed on are from 25 different states and include 22 Greens, 19 Democrats, 19 Libertarians, 3 Independents, 1 Republican, 1 Socialist, and 1 Peace and Freedom Party member, and more may be added to the website by the time you read this. Members of the Coalition Against War Spending do not all agree with each other on many topics, including their reasons for opposing war spending, but they all back this short statement. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have cost Americans over $1 trillion in direct costs and over $3 trillion altogether. At a time when our national debt exceeds $13 trillion, we can no longer afford these wars. It's time for Congress to reject any funding except to bring all our troops safely home, signed by the candidates and organizations. And when I look down the list of the candidates, there is one from Connecticut, Scott Deshefi of the 2nd District in New London from the Green Party. So now you have someone there that you can vote for if you live in that district and you don't have to go along with our incumbents who are funding these wars. The sad part for me is that the agreed-upon statement opposing the wars only deals with money, and nothing at all is said about the 1 million-plus people that have been killed and maimed in these illegal wars. What does that say about we Americans, about who we are, about our values? Well, to go to the website to see where Americans are saying no to war spending, the website is warisacrime.org, warisacrime.org. And now we're going to hear David Ray Griffin's response to a question from the audience about why the, quote, liberal media, like Democracy Now!, and why the peace movement do not cover or embrace 9/11 truth.
There are different theories. One is these people are on the payroll, too. You know, you've heard that, probably. Another is that they're saying, well, look, we're out there so far already on the left, we can't go any further, we completely lose credibility. And we've got a lot of things to expose, and some of them will say there are a lot of things much more important than 9/11. A few of them even say 9/11 is really not important at all. Who cares? Both Alexander Coburn and George Monbiot have made the argument that they've worked so hard over the last decades to build up the credibility of the left, of the peace movement, of the anti-war movement, so on. And here we come along and destroy their credibility. That is their argument, and that's why they don't want to have anything to do with us. Well, of course, implicit in that is that what we are saying is so obviously false. And they even accuse us of believing in magic. So I wrote a reply to Monbiot, it's called of being morons. So I wrote a reply called Of Magic and Morons. And The Guardian would not publish it. He had made this accusation in The Guardian. Well, he's a regular columnist for The Guardian. So somebody said, well, the only way you can get it done is call them up. So I would, you know, the time difference, I'd get up in the middle of the night and call The Guardian. Oh, he's not here now. You'll have to call back tomorrow. Well, we're dealing with another story. And by the time I finally got a real conversation, he says, well, you know, that was several days ago. It's a cold story now. Coburn wrote his attack on us, and me in particular, in Le Monde Diplomatique. And the law in France, if you attack another person by name, the newspaper has to give the other person the right of reply, same number of words. So this guy in Paris encouraged me, so wrote this, sent FedEx over there. They wouldn't publish it. Well, how do you make them publish it? You have to take them to court and spend tens of thousands of dollars to get a lawyer to. So the law doesn't mean anything because only the rich can, you know. So it finally got published in Le Monde Diplomatique Nordic edition, the Norwegian edition. So it did get published, but very few people read that edition. So they pretty much got us. But I want to focus on this issue of credibility. And I was just thinking to dinner tonight, I mean, we've got now really absolute physical proof about Building 7. So I'm thinking of writing and, as I say, to believe in the official story of Building 7, you have to believe in a miracle. You have to believe in magic. So I'm thinking of writing an article to, you know, Coburn, Monbiot, Ballast, etc. Which part of free fall do you not understand? You know, you can ask any high school physics teacher whether the official theory of 9/11, and if they're not employed by the government or don't have an IQ lower than their temperature, they will tell you that is not possible. I mean, it's so elementary. It's really eighth grade physics we're talking about here. And so they're discrediting themselves by claiming to believe the official story or even not challenging the official story when the official story is so obviously false. On a whole range of things. I'm just saying Building 7 is the most obvious of the obvious. And we've got empirical proof that the war on terror is based on a lie. And that's what my tour is about, to try to get the traditional anti-war and peace movements to join forces with the 9/11 movement, we've got numbers and we've got proof. Why wouldn't you want that? Now, numbers, let me say, we've got now all of these professional organizations. I've mentioned architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. We have religious leaders for 9/11 Truth, scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice, political leaders for 9/11 Truth, lawyers for 9/11 Truth, intelligence officers, any of those here for 9/11 Truth, pilots, veterans. We've got the 9/11 Truth movement is now highly professionalized. Now, architects and engineers is the biggest with 1,200 members. Medical professionals, I think we're over 400 now. And pilots is about that big, I believe, and veterans is pretty big, and the others have over 100, so on. So this is a highly credible movement. You've got very well-informed people who are all agreeing the official story is a lie. Therefore, these wars are based on a lie. Why wouldn't the peace and anti-war movements want to avail of itself of all these people, all of these professionals, all of this proof? I don't understand it, but it's a mysterious world.
And speaking of the anti-war movement, there is a national conference to bring the troops home now on July 23rd through the 25th in Albany, New York. It's called a National Conference to Bring the Troops Home Now. And if you want more information on it, you can go to their website, which is www.nationalpeaceconference.org. That's nationalpeaceconference.org, or you can call them at 518-227-6947. That's 518-227-6947 to find out more about that. And some of their speakers are going to be Noam Chomsky, Donna DeWitt, Cindy Sheehan, and others. And now I want to read you a few opening paragraphs to an article that was in the Daily News on Sunday, June 6th. It's called "Charles Rangel Slams President Obama for Being Like Dick Cheney, Fighting in Iraq Only for Oil." And here it goes. Representative Charles Rangel compared President Obama to former Vice President Dick Cheney Saturday for their shared commitment to the Iraq War, one the Harlem Democrat argues is based on the country's hunger for oil. "I challenge anyone to tell me we aren't there because of the oil," said Rangel. And now I want to tell you about a new movie that was recently released called Invisible Empire, A New World Order Defined. It was produced by Jason Burmes of Loose Change fame. And here's what it says about the movie on its cover. "For the first time ever, the secret agenda of the planet's ruthless superclass is exposed in stark detail. This documentary film chronicles how men of power and influence have worked in stealth for centuries to establish an oppressive world government. Learn how this global oligarchy controls the populace through drug trafficking, money laundering, staged terror attacks, media propaganda, and debt. The criminal controllers have successfully dominated the globe and are now in the final phase of consolidating power. Invisible Empire is a damning indictment of the globalists through their own words and documents." It goes on to say, "Worldwide tyranny isn't coming, it's here. This isn't conspiracy theory, it's conspiracy fact. The New World Order is out in the open, all documented in stunning living color." So if you want to get yourself a copy of this movie, you can go to the website infowars.com. If you'd like to share your comments about this show, I can be reached at cheryl@ct911truth.org. You can also listen to the show on WWUH 91.3 FM on Thursdays at 12:30 and on WESU 88.1 FM on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.